But the idea of ministerial kingship, blending then in some ways Old Testament ideas of kingship and Gregory the Great's book, The Pastoral Rule, made this notion of kingship. It is a great burden. It is a great responsibility. It is entrusted by God to his servants to be exercised on God's behalf for the benefit of other people. One would be answerable for it. In other words, office was not meant to bring wealth, power, rank, prestige, importance. That's not the point. The point was service to others. But that in a way, this ministry was to be extended right through the society. For example, by the time of Charlemagne's son, Louis, his name was Louis the Pious, Louis actually explicitly told in one of those great annual assemblies of the Franks, all of the people sort of arrayed there before him, that they had a share in his ministry, and it was their responsibility then to pass this on right through the society. What about those who were not of the clergy or of the governing class, let's say the royal family? We might refer to secular sanctity as a term that would perhaps catch the sense of the ideal that was preached to the Carolingian laity. Carolingian teachers, very important to say, they didn't urge everyone to go off to monasteries. They didn't say, you know, if you want to be a holy person, you have to go off to a monastery. What they told people to do was to be good, to be holy, to be saintly in their current status, in their current occupation. Christian ethics were to be taught. Again and again and again in the Carolingian period, treatises on virtues and vices were written. Now, this is a rather interesting way of setting out the problem, setting out the possibilities for the people of the Carolingian world, for the lay people of the Carolingian world. The virtues, of course, the Christian virtues of faith, hope, and love, and then the ancient virtues, Stoic virtues, of prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude, which were eventually taken on board by Christianity, were then often set in opposition to the deadly sins, or sometimes the Beatitudes from the Sermon on the Mount in the fifth chapter of Matthew were set off against the deadly sins. Sometimes the Ten Commandments were set off against the deadly sins. So there were a whole series of treatises that laid out, in a sense, what kinds of moral and spiritual failings a person might encounter and what kinds of sort of spiritual medicines or spiritual methods, you see, one might cultivate in order to counter those shortcomings. So again and again and again, we find an attempt to sort of teach, to disseminate Christian views of ethics in this Carolingian society. Now, the Carolingian Renaissance had a number of slightly unexpected results. One of them, interestingly enough, is that, and ironically, is as the Carolingians were trying to formulate a basic sense of teaching in the Latin language, they killed Latin. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, we think of Latin today as a dead language because people don't speak it anymore. Oh, in one or two places in the world it's used on occasion. But generally speaking, of course, people don't speak Latin anymore. Latin had been evolving in late antiquity, and it had been evolving in the direction of Romance, in the direction of a language that was still written and spoken. Along came the Carolingians, teaching Latin correctly, and they separated Latin from the development of Romance, so that Romance continued as a spoken language, whereas Latin was, in a sense, frozen as a very precisely fixed literary language, and in a sense, began its career as a dead language. Now, that wasn't certainly what the Carolingians were trying to do, but it was an accidental outcome of the work that they did in sort of improving the basic teaching of Latin. Now, in addition to saying that the Carolingians sort of killed Latin, and you have to understand that I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek, the Carolingians produced an enormous amount of Latin literature, some of it of very high quality. There were a number, for example, of major figures who were poets, who had mastered the classical meters, who had a beautiful sense of language, who could write with real feeling, who could write on a wide variety of poetic themes. There were other authors, for example, Einhard, who was born about 770, died in 840. Einhard wrote letters, he wrote the lives of saints, but he also wrote a very famous biography of Charlemagne, which is still widely read and admired to this day. It's quite a remarkable portrait of Charlemagne himself. It's a very brief book, it's easy to read, it's available in accessible translations. he based this on the lives of the 12 Caesars by Suetonius, which you may recall we mentioned when we were talking about the literature of Rome's Silver Age. Suetonius, the historian of the first 12 Roman emperors.